Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn, and it's Free for All Friday. Here on the podcast, we get to learn about something new and interesting, or whatever I've stumbled across on YouTube. And I have a good reason to be on YouTube, by the way. Go visit the Council of Trent YouTube channel. Just search Council of Trent on YouTube, C-O-U-N-S-E-L, and you'll come across the logo, you'll come across me. And I'm specializing in doing rebuttal videos to anti-Catholic videos online. So if you want us to create more of that, please consider supporting us at TrentHornPodcast.com. There's really no other Catholics who are doing rebuttal videos like these. There's a few maybe, but not to the length that we're doing them. And we're taking on hour-long Protestant sermons that are opposed to the Catholic Church and breaking them down bit by bit and saying, hey, here's what they get wrong and here's the truth. So we want to make more of these. And to help us do that, we need you to go to TrentHornPodcast.com. For as little as $5 a month, you make these videos possible. You get access to bonus content, special video thank you from me, sneak peek at bonus content, and audio versions of these rebuttal videos that are posted online. So if you want us to do more of that, consider going to TrentHornPodcast.com. Now, with that said, let's hop into the latest thing that sucked me in on YouTube that I want to share with you. And those are industrial safety videos. So I care a lot about safety. My wife teases me a bit that I try very hard to safety-proof our home for our children. I've got those little corner devices that you stick onto the corners. And I was just blaming myself when poor little Thomas the other day, the first time we had to go to the emergency room. Well, we didn't go to the emergency room, we went to the intensive care. But combined, we've had kids for about 5 years, and we did not have to go to the emergency room. We still haven't had to go yet. Praise be to God. Let's keep it that way. I almost went to urgent care with Matthew once when we lived in Phoenix, Arizona, because he touched a cactus. I remember my wife and I disagreed about whether we should get rid of the pokey plants in the backyard. And she thought, oh, I'm sure it'll be fine. I'm like, oh, maybe we should get rid of them. And then I was watching him by myself, and he touched the cactus and had these needles in his hand, and I didn't know how I'd be able to get them out of his hand because they were really, really small needles. And I freaked out, and I threw him in the car. Not threw him, of course. I put him in his car seat. He was little. He was probably only like 2 years old, 18 months old, and we were driving. I was going to drive him to the emergency room. I was almost going to pay like $1,000, $2,000, but then I called another urgent care, and they said, just get him some cortisone cream from the pharmacy, and these very tiny needles will come out on their own. And so I'm very grateful there was an urgent care that was able to deal with me on the phone in that regard. Poor little Thomas, though, he had to end up going because he hit a nightstand that I did not have the corner guard on. I put all the corner guards everywhere else in the house, but I thought it would be overkill to put it on this little nightstand. And isn't that the case? You try to make things safe, and your children find the one thing you weren't able to make safe and exploit it. But, you know, they're kids. That happens. We got bumps and scrapes. I got scars all over me from different adventures as a child. So these things happen. Now, that's okay in the home. When you go to industry, factories, construction sites, when you go to logging camps, when you make a mistake there and have an accident, it could lead to a serious injury, being maimed, or it could be a fatality. So let's go through some of these industrial safety videos. I'll start with one that would still apply to you all listening here to the podcast. And that deals with ladder safety. So according to the World Health Organization, the United States leads the world in ladder deaths. America, we're number one. We're number one in ladder fatalities. Each year, there are more than 164,000 emergency room treated injuries and 300 deaths in the United States that are caused by falls from ladders. Most ladder deaths are from falls of 10 feet or less. You might be thinking, oh, I just need to get on the roof. I need to get something. Quick, put a ladder up. Oh, it doesn't quite reach the whole way. Well, I'll just balance on the very top of the ladder and hop onto the roof because I got to get that frisbee the kids threw up on the roof. And you think you're not that high, but if you fall, you slam your head down, you're 10 feet up in the air, and your head lands on a concrete driveway, that can be a fatal injury, or it could have lifelong consequences. So at WorkSafe BC, which is one of my favorite YouTube channels for occupational safety videos, WorkSafe BC has great videos. And I just love people. They have their Canadian accents. And in some of the videos, they're dramatizations of real events. And I remember one of them had these shipyard workers, and they're swearing. He's like, What about that? What should we do? He didn't radio back to us. What should we do? Should we do something? Don't go in there, man. It could be dangerous. And like, F you, man. I'm not leaving my buddy in there. And I'm just like, oh, Canadian swearing. Oh, that's a new thing for me to hear. I thought you guys were too polite for that kind of stuff. I think that Canadian accent was starting to bleed into an Irish accent a little bit what I was trying to do. So this is one of their safety videos called You're a Pro Falls from Ladders. And it has a dramatization of a foreman telling a construction worker to go get the nail gun off the roof of a place of a house they're building. And he tells him to use the ladder.
Hey, Lucky.
Yeah?
I need you to get the nail gun off the roof.
All right, no probs.
You know what you're doing with the ladder, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And get the big ladder.
How many mothers do I need?
He was such a know-it-all. You could never tell him anything. Look, I don't have time to babysit. Look, it's tough. It's tough getting people who know what they're doing. If they know what they're doing, they're working. But he was a good kid. Tried.
And then he falls off the ladder.
I see his parents at Temple every week. I don't know what to say. He's gone. And I have to live with that for the rest of my life.
Always place the ladder 1 foot out for every four up. Make sure the ladder extends 3 feet above the top and tie it off. You're a pro. There's always time to do it right.
Now, just from a genre perspective, I love industry safety videos because they have that cheesy synthesized music. I especially appreciate this one because it makes me feel good at the end. It's like, I am a pro. I can do this right. I'm not going to be dangerous or reckless anymore. And that's what I mentioned on the Matt Frad podcast when it came to persuading people. That's actually a decent way to present a message. It's called, a mentor of mine, Mike Phelan, called that appealing to someone's nobility. So when you want to correct people, sometimes you say, don't do this wrong, stupid. You know, well, that's not the kind of approach you want to take with somebody because they're going to take offense at that. But when you appeal to their nobility and let them know, hey, they're strong enough, smart enough, good enough that you expect this from them, then it's like, okay, yeah. So the tagline, you're a pro. You can take the time. Because a lot of times people will cut corners and it will lead to accidents because they say to themselves, I'm a pro. I've done this a million times. So sometimes it'll be a rookie, an amateur who does something and doesn't know what they're doing and they get hurt. But a lot of times, a lot of workplace accidents will happen from a veteran, someone who's done the same thing over and over and over and over again. And they cut corners because they've always gotten away with it in the past and their luck catches up with them. And they think they're a pro and they cut corners. So I like the tagline of the video, you're a pro, you can take time to do that. So when it comes to ladder safety in the video, if you're putting up a ladder at home, don't make sure if it's a, now the ladder they were dealing with here was one of the ladders that you lean up against the side of a house, not one that stands with two legs on the ground. So an extension ladder that you would put up. And I have to use an extension ladder to get on the roof of our house when the kids shoot the Nerf guns and the darts get up there. But you got to make sure that for every 4 feet up, the ladder is away 1 foot. You don't want the ladder like leaning straight up against the wall because as you're climbing, it could fall backwards. Make sure it has a sturdy base and make sure that the ladder is long enough so that it extends 3 feet beyond the place that you're trying to go, beyond the roof that you're climbing up to. Because if it just goes up and merely touches the roof, then you're kind of scrambling to get on the ladder or you're standing on the top rung. Standing on the top rung of a ladder is usually a terrible idea. Usually it says you're not supposed to stand there to do that. And then, you know, bad things can happen. So that's my safety advice for you. You're playing with ladders. Don't mess around. 300 people are killed in ladder-related falls and injuries every year, or are killed by ladder-related accidents here in the United States every year. I do not want you to be one of them. I don't want you to be one of the 170,000 people who are injured in a ladder-related accident. Don't do that. Follow your ladder safety. And then at the very least, don't be like Michael Scott in The Office when they do the safety training, and don't mess around with somebody who is on a ladder.
We do safety training every year or after an accident. We've never made it a full year. This particular time, I was reaching for a supply box on the top shelf when one office worker, who shall remain nameless, kicked the ladder out from under me and yelled,
"Hey, Daryl, how's it hanging?"
And I fell and busted my ankle, and I'm legitimately scared for my workers.
So there's our lesson from The Office. They could do a whole safety video on don't be like Michael Scott. So next one up, let's go. So this one won't be as applicable to you, but I find it fascinating. And that is forklift safety. So both safety for the driver of a forklift and safety for the pedestrians who are around forklifts. This is another video from WorkSafe BC. Forklift safety, stay in the cab, stay alive. All right, here's what do I say to you? You're driving your forklift and you round a turn too sharp and then your forklift tips over. What do you do? Well, let's play this video and you will find out.
They don't wear seatbelts. And when the machine does dip, they try and jump clear. The problem is, you'll get crushed or killed if you leave the cab.
So the video shows a guy who tried to jump out of a forklift that was tipping over, and then it shows the forklift pinning him because the forklift has a hard top above it that you're driving, and it just pins him to the ground. And it's actually really graphic. If you watch these videos online, fair warning, they've got a lot of like fake blood and stuff like that to drive the point home.
These are the basic rules. Don't travel with a raised load. Don't speed. Wear your seatbelt. And if your machine does tip, you won't be able to jump clear. So brace yourself and stay in the cab. It'll save your life.
Yeah, so just remember that next time you are driving in a forklift and it tips over. Well, you should be wearing your seatbelt regardless. Keep your hands on the wheel. Your feet need to be braced against the ground and just hang on tight as it tips over. You just don't want the accidents, the injury or death will occur if you're thrown from the cab and pinned by the forklift. I was also reading about another account of someone who was unloading pallets off a forklift, and the whole pallet load, lumber load, weighed about 14,000 pounds. And he parked the forklift and put on the parking brake, which normally should secure the load. But the problem was, because the weight in the front of the forklift was so heavy, 14,000 pounds beyond its capacity, the back wheels came up slightly off the ground. And so the forklift did not have enough traction for the parking brake to successfully keep the forklift from rolling forward. And it was on a slight incline. And so he got out, was unloading the loads, and then the forklift rolled forward and pinned him between a wall and the lumber he was unloading, and that was a fatality. So just remember all that safety. But it's not just, of course, people who are driving in forklifts. If you're ever working especially at a lumber yard or something like that, there are forklifts zipping around all the time, and they're quiet. They're deceptively quiet vehicles. It's easy to miss them, and they're heavy, and they're going fast. And when you're working in a lumber yard and you're walking around, it's easy for pedestrians. Pedestrians are always supposed to yield the right of way to a forklift. A lot of these sites will have kind of walking lanes to show where people should be walking, but regardless, you're supposed to give the forklift a right of way and establish communication with the driver to make sure they know they see you. But the problem is, when you drive in a forklift, the front of the cab is easily, the vision is obscured. The guy could be carrying a load. It's not an expansive window in front of him. There's, you know, large bars that are holding up the cage around the driver that can obscure vision. And so you think he sees you, but he may not. You could be walking and still be staying out of his line of sight. And that could lead to an accident, as one described here in this testimony about a forklift pedestrian accident that resulted in an injury, but not a fatality.
I had a piece of paper in my hand, and we were sort of looking down, and we were discussing something and walking towards the office.
That's when the visor flashed in front of my roll-up, right in front of the machine.
And then I got hit harder than I've ever been hit before, right from the bottom of my back to the top of my head. Just a big slam.
The first words that went into my mind were, "Oh my God, Ian."
If I hadn't hit exactly where I hit and been held up by the fork, you're going to go under the machine.
So, sober warning indeed if you are in an area with forklifts or sometimes even when I go to Home Depot, I'm just like, hey, people are moving around here. Be careful of some of these carts you're going. Now, usually when they have to bring in mini forklifts to move stuff, they actually, they close off the aisles so that, you know, customers don't wander in there to, you know, get injured or something like that. So forklift safety, both for drivers and for pedestrians that are around them. All right, here's the next industrial safety videos. They deal with grain engulfment. So according to one article, grain entrapment or grain engulfment occurs when a person becomes submerged in grain and cannot get out without assistance. It most frequently occurs in grain bins and other storage facilities such as silos or grain elevators. Usually unstable grain collapses suddenly, wholly or partially, burying workers who may be within it. Entrapment occurs when victims are partially submerged but cannot remove themselves. Engulfment occurs when they are completely buried within the grain. Engulfment has a very high fatality rate. There's actually a scene of this, if you saw the movie The Quiet Place with John Krasinski, where the kids are trying to get away from the monsters and the boy ends up in a grain silo, and but he's sinking in the grain. Now, normally you wouldn't be doing that. What happens is when people are inside grain silos and they're trying to break up clumps of grain that are in there, you know, they're doing that. And normally when the grain is just in the silo, it's not hazardous. Usually it's not. If it's all stacked, sometimes kids will like play in that. I've heard it described as like dry water to swim around in this grain kind of. But the problem is that when the grain is being unloaded from a silo, when an auger is opened at the bottom of the silo, it creates a situation where the grain is now flowing. And as the grain flows, you can be caught up in the flow and then buried in the grain and you'll asphyxiate. You can't breathe under that. And so that's one situation that can happen. Another, so you can be, someone can be in it and the auger is open and the grain is draining. It can also be the case the auger is closed and grain is not flowing, but there are clumps that have formed, including a cavity has formed. So what can happen is that there's a hard level of grain that's been compacted at the top that forms a bridge over a cavity or a gap, an empty, absent area of grain. And if that breaks, think about how that compacted grain at the top of the silo, it's kind of like thin ice. If it breaks, you'll fall through and the other grain will fill the void. And then the person is just immediately engulfed. And if they're engulfed, the chance of their survival is incredibly low because the pressure of the grain is so hard. Even someone who is partially submerged in grain, even if it's only up to like your waist, you wouldn't be able to get yourself out on your own. And when rescuers come to get you, they can't pull you out. Rescuers who get people who are submerged but not engulfed in grain, they have a special apparatus they use. It's a steel shafts, a three-piece set that forms a pipe around the individual that keeps the grain from flowing in. Then they pull the grain out, they siphon the grain out and use a harness to pull the person out of the grain. Now, of course, that can take a long time. And if you're engulfed in grain, you're going to asphyxiate and suffer brain damage in merely a few minutes. And so these voids can happen when someone goes in, they break up the clumps, and a temperature change in the silo has caused the grain to clump together and create these kinds of voids. Also, it can happen, a person could just be in there scooping out grain and it's accumulated at one side of a silo and it goes up above the person's head and then it all collapses and evens out and it just falls on the person and ends up burying them. There was an article about a gentleman named Bodhi Blissett who this happened to him, and he says, I don't even recall how high the corn was. It came down and got me with no warning, too fast, too much, and I don't like remembering it. There's a story that happened back in 2010 in Mount Carroll, Illinois, that two young workers, a lot of times the people who die in this are, it's tragic, teenagers who are working on the family farm and don't understand the dangers that are involved and take risk, or they're not informed about proper safety procedures and they pay for it. And this is a story recounting what happened to one of them. These teens were working in a grain silo and one of them got caught in a grain feed.
We went in there and we each grabbed under his armpit and we started pulling him out and we started sinking with him.
Carol, letter 11 will be en route. Can you have a lifeline in the air until advised otherwise?
10-4. Go ahead, 18.
So they tried to get their friend out, but unfortunately they were unable to do so. And now The boy's mother actually campaigns in that community, and they campaign to have better safety standards to prevent miners from working in grain-related areas and help other people to not have these kind of fatalities happen.
We should have had a safety harness on, for one. That way, if something like that did happen, we could have pulled on to the safety harness and it would keep us above the corn. But we didn't have that on. And for that reason, that's why Wyatt continued to sink instead of having that constant pressure of holding him up.
You need to.
So something to consider there. And now you know about the hazards of grain engulfment, grain confinement. We don't know about a lot of that here. Sorry, don't know a lot about that here, but you might be a listener in the Midwest where this is actually something, you know, you have a lot of grain, you have a lot of grain in silos, and something you may maybe have heard about. You may remember a story in your own community where this has happened and people had to pay a very painful and sad lesson to protect the safety and health of other workers. So if you haven't, if you haven't learned a lesson like that in a painful and tragic way, hopefully you will learn it from this podcast. And who knows, it may help you. You could be going on a farm and someone's going to go into a grain silo without proper safety procedures. Now you're equipped to prevent another tragedy like this. Next one is confined space entry. So confined space entry, sometimes you'll look at different areas, you'll be walking through and you'll see a sign that says danger confined space. And what does that mean? Well, in areas where it is difficult to enter and exit, where it's small, where oxygen could be used up quickly, where entrapment is a possibility, these are confined spaces. And there can be legitimate dangers of things like toxic or poisonous gases or low oxygen environments forming, where a person can be killed very quickly. So another video on WorkSafe BC is completely on this, confined spaces, deadly spaces. It deals a lot with sewage treatment, with cleaning out industrial tanks, things like that. And I love how the video starts, because it starts with kind of a montage of workers in these environments being kind of full of hubris and pride, saying, I don't have to worry about that kind of stuff. So I love these safety videos, one, because they're fascinating. They talk about things that I don't deal with on a day-to-day basis, so they're educational. But I love kind of the acting and just this general pattern, the synthesized music, the people are just like, I don't have to worry about this kind of stuff. Tragically, you do. So here's the beginning of that.
Accidents in confined spaces? Maybe if you work in a mine or something. But the work I do is pretty standard. If there were a problem, I'd be able to see it.
Well, you hear about pipes flooding and gases that'll knock you out, but extra safety precautions take time. Anyway, I've never seen anybody get hurt.
We're well trained, and I'm alert enough to recognize a problem if it develops.
But what if it develops too late, my friend?
I've worked in this industry for 20 years. None of my men have ever been seriously injured. We're quick enough to handle any kind of trouble.
Confined spaces, deadly spaces.
These people obviously do their jobs well, but their response to the dangers of confined spaces ignores the reality of a potentially deadly hazard. Incidents of confined space injuries or fatalities are disturbingly similar, even though the jobs and job sites vary.
So what happens usually is that someone will be in a space, and it's a lot of different things. It could be a space that has once had oxygen and has been replaced by some kind of a poison gas. So I think NH2 is one of these poison gases that can develop in sewers coming from decomposing waste products will create an environment without oxygen replaced with a poisonous gas. As we'll talk about with some other incidents, the oxygen itself could be depleted, and it's not a poisonous gas, it's just a low oxygen environment. And so whatever it is, workers will enter into these environments. And what usually happens with confined space fatalities, the most people who die in a confined space fatality are would-be rescuers. So one guy on a team becomes unconscious because of a lack of oxygen. And another guy jumps down, is like, I got to get him. And he thinks like the guy just had a heart attack or hit his head or something. And he goes down to help him. And then that guy ends up passing out. And then a third guy sees them and he jumps in to help and he passes out. And suddenly, instead of one person in danger, now there are three or four people who are incapacitated, grown men who weigh, you know, 200 to 250 pounds, and you don't have the proper rescue apparatus to rescue them. So even if emergency crews arrive on time and you have a winch to be able to get someone out and you have a firefighter who has a self-contained breathing apparatus to be able to go into this area. Before, when it was just one person, you know, you had a better chance of saving that person's life. If you have three or four people down there, you might get one person out, but by the time you can get the fourth person out of there, they've been deprived of oxygen so long they could have serious brain damage, or usually it ends up being a fatality. So here is a testimony from one man who, that's essentially the pattern that happened. Here's how he describes what happened to him.
Last year, my partner and I were repairing leaks on the air release valves in the sewer system. My partner was in the hole, pumping out water. I happened to look in and saw him slumped over.
Sean, are you okay?
1 second he's fine, the next, out like a light. Hey, I'm pretty strong. There's no doubt in my mind I can climb down and pull him up quickly. All I remember is going down the ladder. Next thing I know, I'm waking up in hospital, and they're telling me my partner's dead. That's how quickly those gases can hit you.
So that's why it's important when people do confined space work that they use a device that can detect the oxygen level in the environment, that it's at least above, I think, something like, you know, 18%. Usually oxygen should be at about 21% to detect the oxygen level and the presence of dangerous gases like NH2, methane, nitrogen. Sometimes in industrial plants, you use an inert gas like nitrogen to flood a system to get rid of the oxygen so you can do repairs on it. But then the area is now oxygen deprived. It's just full of nitrogen. There's another video on here of someone who there was a tank and a roll of duct tape had fallen into a reactor, 5 foot drop. And the guy just, you know, they had to put on a cap on this reactor. He figured, okay, I'll just hop in, grab the duct tape, and hop right out. And he jumped in, but he thought it was an oxygen environment. It had no oxygen whatsoever. He took one breath of that nitrogen, and he was unconscious. Another guy went in to go get him. Same thing, exactly what happened. This can even happen in ship cargo holds. There are cases where ships will take cargo, and they'll dock in port, and the cargo hold is airtight, and the cargo inside, like let's say it's lumber or something like that, can something, a microbial process related to it, like it's not lumber, like processed lumber, but like trees, logs, you know, you have, it's in here, and it can deplete the oxygen in the cargo hold so that by the time it gets into port, the cargo hold no longer has oxygen in it. So there's a case of that, of four stevedores. These are people who worked to unload cargo, who died when they entered a cargo hold and it was oxygen deprived. Other people who retrofit ships, they'll go into an old ship that has been docked for like 10 years and it's defunct. And the oxygen hold made of iron oxidizes, and all the oxygen in the hold was used up by this iron oxidizing chemical reaction. And people go in there and there's 0% oxygen and they just pass out, and one after another comes in. So if you're going to do confined space work, take the time, get the confined space permit, make sure you have a rescue plan, a monitor involved. You're a pro. You can take the time to do that. Here's the next set of videos. This is the scariest one for me. This is the absolute scariest one of kinds of industrial accidents that I've looked at, and that is Delta P. Okay, so delta P means just, delta means change, and P refers to pressure. So delta P occurs when there's a change in pressure dealing with water. So these are accidents that occur at dams, with drains, where water is in an area, and then a drain is opened, and you have two things holding water, one at a higher pressure, one at a lower pressure. Like, let's say you have water. Actually, there's a video, if you look online, search Delta P on YouTube. It shows a guy trying to clear a flooded area of an Australian highway, and the drain is clogged by plastic bags filled with clippings, like tree clippings. And so there's firefighters, everyone's there, they're trying to get the road going again, they're trying to clear this blockage of the drain, and the worker pulls the last bag out, but guess what's happening? What happens at home when you pull the plug on your bathtub? Well, the water is at a higher pressure in the tub than it is in the pipe, and it seeks to go out the pipe, and it goes out with a tremendous amount of force, and the guy got pulled in, and everyone's frantically rushing to keep him above water, and five or six grown men cannot hold this guy up, so they have to pump out the water using the fire truck, and it was lucky there was an emergency crew standing by that ended up saving this guy's life. So this is the video on Delta P, and it details accidents where usually you have like scuba divers who are cleaning an industrial area and they open a drain, that blockage, and they get sucked in. They could be working on a swimming pool, resurfacing the interior, and get pulled to a drain and they form a seal and they either drown or the suction is so violent they suffer internal injuries. Like I said, it's the most unpleasant that I have that I've come across. And this video explains it well, why Delta P can be such a hazard that people don't notice, because they may just see a pipe, and it could be a small pipe. It could be a pipe that only has about a few inches of diameter, six inches of diameter pipe. And you might think, oh, what? I don't have to be afraid of that. Yeah, you do, depending on the pressures that are involved. So here's the video to explain it.
The body of water on the right wants to rush to the body of water on the left by means of the pipe between them. The pressure exerted on the valve stopping this water transfer can be enormous, depending on the difference in the depths of the water and the diameter of the pipe. If the difference between the depth of water is 50 feet and the diameter of the pipe is 10 inches, the force of water exerted on the valve is nearly 1,700 pounds. If the valve was suddenly opened and your arm was near, it would be sucked into the hole instantly. Trying to remove your arm would be like trying to lift a car completely off the ground with one hand. You could only remove your arm if the pressures between the two bodies became nearly equalized. But at the pressure in this example, your body makes a perfect seal, stopping the bodies of water from equalizing. The formula for calculating the force of water through a hole at a particular depth is the area of the hole multiplied by the difference in water depth, multiplied by the PSI per foot of water depth, or in the situation.
So then it goes on to calculate that if you just had a 50-foot column of water in another tank connected by a 10-inch diameter hole, a 10-inch diameter pipe that's open, the force of the water going through is about 1,700 pound PSI. That feels like, so if you got your hand in that pipe, you won't be able to pull it out, because the pressure of the water against you to try to pull out would be like it's like a car had been pushed up against you, and you're like, a car is pressing you against this drain, a full automobile. So it's 1,700 pounds per square inch, I think. And it's just, you wouldn't be able to push that back off to get out now that you've formed the seal there. So Delta P is something that, especially probably the thing that's one of the things that scares commercial divers the most when they're working around drains or dams or sluice gates. So they have to always have proper rescue equipment, tethers, other things to be able to keep them safe. So Delta P is the scariest one on the list. And I am going to end with the funniest video that I've come across. Protect your hearing, what noise does to your ears. This is simple. If you're going to be around loud things, I took my kids to the Monster Truck Show a few weeks ago. I got them the cute little earmuffs. So they wore little earmuffs. If you go to my social media, you can see me. You can see the boys watching the Monster Trucks, and they got their earmuffs on because it protects their hearing. I wore earplugs because hearing loss is something. It's not like you're going to go deaf after hearing one loud concert. But it degrades your hearing so that you're unable to detect things at the edges of hearing, whether it's frequency or volume. So I just love this video and the incentive it uses to say, hey, you gotta wear earplugs and ear protection so you can protect your hearing. And so it starts off with a guy talking to a girl at a party, and they're around the snack table.
I don't like them as much. I prefer the original.
That's it.
I'm an original kind of guy.
Did you eat all the cake?
Yeah, you got me. Yeah. I'm not sure who brought the cheesies.
What? No, not the cheesies.
What's that? Huh?
Oh my god, nothing. Never mind.
Wait, I...
Relationships are built on communication. Hearing loss can cause that communication to break down. But what causes hearing loss?
So then the video goes on to explain what causes hearing loss and says, hey, you should wear ear protection when you work in a loud environment. And then we get to the end of the video, to the conversation, and we find out this young man, how would this have turned out if he had used hearing protection and protected his hearing?
Yeah, I really like you too.
Now, I just have to say, does he really want to go out with this girl who wouldn't just say, are you okay? Are you not able to hear me? I guess he could have just said, I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. I don't see why she had to get so mad at him. So I don't know if she's the great catch now. Or maybe he was being legitimately rude. I'm not sure. So maybe they need to do a series of safety videos on what to do in your relationships and how not to make your spouse unduly mad at you by not paying attention. Maybe I didn't wear my proper ear protection when I was younger. So I love at the end, it's what she was saying was, I really like those jeans on you. What? I said, I really like those jeans on you, okay? Just trying to make flirty small talk at this party, but you didn't watch the Work Safe PC video. Now I don't love you anymore. And on that note, this has been a fun free-for-all Friday. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you go to trendhornpodcast.com, check out our bonus content, and support our work there. Get ready for all kinds of great videos on our YouTube channel and other great podcast episodes coming up next week and others for you to catch up on if you've missed them. We've got over 250 episodes now. Go and check those out. While you're at iTunes or Google Play, consider leaving a review for our podcast. Thank you all so much, and I hope you have a very blessed day and weekend.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit trendhornpodcast.com.